Welcome to the Voice of Literacy,
where literacy researchers discuss implications of research for teachers, principals, parents, and policymakers.
Join the biweekly podcast and discussion forum.
My name is Candace Kuby, a professor of early childhood literacy at the University of Missouri.
And my name is Sarah Vanderzanen, a professor of literacy education at the University of Northern Iowa. This week, we hear from Dr. Michelle Honeyford, assistant professor of language and literacy in the Faculty of Education at the University of Manitoba, where she teaches courses in English language arts, language and literacy, and qualitative research. Her research interests focus on understanding how learning is mediated by student cultural identities and how ways of knowing and learning privileged in schools can be expanded to include and represent diverse youth more effectively, particularly through writing, multiliteracies, and critical inquiry, which will be discussed today. We're going to discuss Dr. Honeyford's recent publication in the Journal of Literacy Research titled From Aki and Aya, Symbolic Convergence in the Multimodal Literacy Practices of Adolescent Immigrant Students. Welcome, Dr. Honeyford.
Thanks, Sarah.
First off, let's hear a little bit about yourself. Tell us how you became interested in multimodal literacy research and your study.
Sure. I want to talk a little bit about Beth's classroom and how I situated this study there. And just tell a little story. When I first entered her classroom as a researcher on a team studying a one-to-one laptop initiative, and as part of the study, I scheduled an observation in Beth's Advanced English as a New Language class. And that day, I watched as just a few minutes into the opening language activity, one student raised her hand and said, excuse me, but can we talk about what happened yesterday? And I watched Beth, as she nodded like she'd been kind of waiting for this to happen. And she turned around the whiteboard that she'd been using. She pulled up a stool, sat near the students, and said, yes, let's talk about it. Where do you want to begin? And it turned out that the day before, as kind of the story unfolded, two Latina high school students walking home from school had been followed and then approached by two males in a van. And due to some quick thinking, the girls had gotten safely away. But the 7th and 8th grade students in this class were understandably concerned. They had a lot of questions. They'd heard some conflicting reports. They were worried about their own safety. And there was even some speculation about how the matter would and should be handled. So a little while later, when the students indicated they were ready, Beth turned the whiteboard around again and eased the students back into the language lesson. But just in the first 10 or 15 minutes in her classroom, it was clear to me that the students considered this to be a safe space talk about what mattered to them, and that they knew that Beth cared about teaching English, but even more so that she cared about them. I was a little less surprised when later in the lesson, Beth deviated from the curriculum again by inviting the students to put away their textbooks and make a circle. And this time she distributed copies of a drama called The American Dream. And so I watched again as the students began reading parts, and I thought, oh, drama, this is excellent. And then when the students as characters began to kind of stop themselves or even stop one another to suggest changing a word or how something should be said, I realized kind of with a little tingle down my spine that this drama about the American Dream was their story, that they had collaboratively written this play that they were now rehearsing and getting ready to perform. Well, that was the first of many visits to Beth's English class over the next few years, where, as I explained in the article, I became really increasingly interested in how Beth was creating with her students a multimodal curriculum around their interests and concerns, particularly growing from their locations and the dislocations they experienced as immigrant youth in this community.
So tell us a little bit about multimodality. When you're talking about multimodality in the article, you are often referring to photo and essay and text, and here you're talking about performance. Could you explain a bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, and that comes, too, from the various ways that I saw Beth doing this work in her classroom. And she was very committed to the idea that learning English as an additional language should be about reading, writing, speaking, listening, viewing, and representing. And so what she sought were these projects that she worked on with students kind of alongside the curriculum, as I just sort of gave an example of, where students were coming with questions and provoking kind of problems and concerns that they would take on together. And then she was seeking ways to make that real and authentic. And so the students utilized audio, they utilized video, they did pieces where they created just really powerful poems, for example, with images that they had collected and poetry that they had written and then recorded. And then Beth found audiences for that work. So they came to a university and presented that, those pieces to teacher candidates and then talked about how teachers can enable and really scaffold the learning of English language learners in their classrooms. So I'd say Beth gave wonderful examples in her classroom of the ways that we can really use multimodality to engage students and make learning literacy real.
Your article talks about sites, S-I-T-E-S, and sites, S-I-G-H-T-S, of students' diasporic identities. Could you explain this notion a bit to our audience as it relates to your study? I think you're touching on that already with some of the stories that you've shared, but a bit more explanation might be helpful.
Sure, and I'm kind of playing with the wording of sites and sites there, because I think both the location, as in sites, S-I-T-E-S, and perspectives, which is how I talk about sites, S-I-G-H-T-S. So locations and perspectives as being really important in this work, really important in the ways that we think about teaching literacy and the ways that we think about literacy learning, particularly for students who can bring, you know, multiple sites and sites to their work in our classrooms, and how we can really push that and encourage that kind of thinking that is really multiple perspectives and multiple locations, and exploring the kinds of things that we want students to learn by thinking about what does that look like in different places and spaces, and what does that feel like, and how does that make us think about things differently.
And I think that brings us to the notion of symbolic convergence, which you talk about at length. Could you help our listeners understand how you situate this notion in the study?
The article is really an attempt to sort of tease out kind of the knots of meaning in a photo essay that the students that year collaboratively created. And it was near the end of the school year, and the students in this English as an additional language class, and again, 7th and 8th grade students, had taken turns bringing home a digital camera over a period of really several months. And over that time, they'd taken hundreds of pictures. Images of their homes and family members, pictures of, you know, pets and favorite foods and memorabilia, even pictures of pictures, using the camera to take pictures of family photos sent from relatives in Mexico or taken in Mexico before moving to the United States. And then every year, Beth celebrated the work that her students were doing in these projects through an open house. And the kids created invitations and sent them to family members and friends and, of course, teachers, administrators at the school level, but also at the school district level. And so this year, they were planning near the end of the year for this open house, and they were selecting the kinds of work, the videos and poetry and essays and other writing work they had done. And they asked her, you know, what can we do with all these pictures we've taken? And so this generated another conversation in the classroom, and, well, what would you like to do with them? And so through that conversation, kind of the idea of creating a collective photo essay came about. And again, through conversation and dialogue and negotiation, they agreed on this title, I Am From Aquí and Allá, I'm From Here and There. And in the article then, I examine how in their images and captions in this piece, in this photo essay, intimately communicating complex ideas about being from here and there. And so specifically, I look at how students are really exploring, stretching, and even really challenging kind of concepts of space and place and time, and how they're invoking their affiliations and allegiances to multiple people and places and ideas that they identify with and belong to, and how they're expressing what it is, just in simple images and words, what they value, believe, and even hold to be ethical and just. So the notion of symbolic convergence really helps me to kind of momentarily untangle and look closely at kind of the inventive and layered ways the students bring together visual and linguistic symbols, but also the ways they kind of invoke that and stipulate that in larger discourses around immigrants and immigration that were circulating around them to creatively portray themselves. They are represented in these photos, but also to critically, I think, challenge the ways they were being portrayed and understood by others. So I'm really talking about symbolic convergence in a way that, that hopefully pushes us to create more spaces in classrooms and schools for students' identities in those multiple sites, the multiple sites we were talking about earlier, to come together, to kind of fluidly merge in ways that recognize their multilingualism, their transnationalism as strengths, as productive, positive locations and perspectives from which to author themselves and to dialogue with others and possibly to work for change.
Right. So we can see already that you have some recommendations or possibly creating spaces and honoring the resources that students are bringing to the classroom from their multi-sided experiences. Do you have specific recommendations for teachers or parents?
I think for teachers, and I'm probably not going to say anything nobody else has said before, but from this study in particular, I think for teachers, it's so important to listen. And I think teachers feel so stressed for time and with the multiple sort of demands of the classroom and their students' lives, that sometimes that's what gets pushed aside. And I think the moments in this classroom that were particularly powerful and generative were those moments when Beth listened, when she created those spaces to listen to her students, to be open to what students had to say, to create opportunities for students to work in and through, you know, the reading and the writing and the speaking and the listening and the viewing and the representing, to create these kind of authentic opportunities and spaces that encompassed kind of all aspects of their lives, and then to allow them to engage kind of on their own terms, to dialogue with others about that. I think what resonated for me, again, in this space, and I allude to it in the article regarding parents, was how what Beth did was really open her classroom to her students' lives. And that was true just even in the visuals, right, in the camera being a tool that could bring pictures of home into school and making their homes and families then part of the curriculum. But what was amazing to see was something so simple as having a tradition of an open house, right, and sending home invitations that the parents could read to welcome them into the classroom. And then once there, to invite them to participate in the dialogue. So they, too, got asked, you know, what does aki and aya mean to you? What does your immigrant identity mean to you? And to be able to share with the teachers there, with the administrators there, kind of their perspective. And their feelings about kind of the push and pull of their immigrant lives.
So thinking about the context of the school with parents and principals and teachers, are there recommendations that you have for policymakers?
I think there, too. We really need to create dialogic spaces that make room for bringing together students and policymakers. I think too often there are too many steps removed, you know, from the people making often the decisions that play out in the day-to-day reality of our classrooms and the students in them. And that distance is just getting greater and greater, I feel. And so I think hopefully this project is just a small example, again, of the ways that we need to listen and dialogue with students in the classrooms, and that dialogue needs to really be two-way and actually multiply directed towards conversations with parents and teachers and students around learning and recognizing, you know, the diversity of sites and sites, again, in that work.
Right. So where are you going next? Where do you see your research taking you, or what are you currently working on now?
Sure. This was work that I conducted in the United States, and I'm currently situated in Canada, and sort of resituating my work here. And it's been really interesting, of course, I think, to see the ways that some of these same kinds of insights and ways of thinking about this work do really naturally resituate themselves and translate themselves, and the ways in which there are very unique sorts of cultural and linguistic interpretations of that based on the culture and the spaces that I work in now. But I'm really shifting in some ways to doing this work in after-school spaces as well as in classroom spaces, and thinking about the ways that we can involve teacher candidates in that work as well. So some of my current work is situated in an after-school program where students from multiple schools and communities are coming, and we're creating, hopefully again, really dialogic spaces to play and to learn together and to come to better understandings of, again, ways that we see the world and understand one another.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Michelle Honeyford. We appreciate all the insights you've shared with us, and we look forward to hearing more about your work in the future.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for this invitation.
You can find Dr. Honeyford's article in the Journal of Literacy Research. Stay current with literacy research. Go to iTunes, Facebook, or Twitter, and search for Voice of Literacy, or go directly to our website, www.voiceofliteracy.org, where you can find a link to this article and additional work done by Dr. Honeyford. We invite you to join the conversation and comment online. This is Voice of Literacy.